Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is from March 10th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Very well. Well, I'm doing pretty well, D.R., although I have been stomping around the living room trying to pick my jaw up off the floor to try and scrape my head off the my brains off the ceiling, or whatever metaphor you want. Related to the following kind of statement. So anyway, this is the end of the week. It'll be March 10th is Friday. It turns out that today, the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, right? The administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, a person who has enormous scientific resources at his or her disposal and has a mandate to protect the environment, right? That in the very name. This guy got on TV and said that he wasn't convinced that carbon dioxide is a cause of global warming. I can't even quite spit it all out. So tell me, Dio, did you see that? Maybe you're better at words in this circumstance than I am.
Yeah, his quote is, quote, "I think that measuring with precision human activity on the climate is something very challenging to do, and there's tremendous disagreement about the degree of impact. So no, I would not agree that it's a primary contributor to the global warming that we see. We need to continue the debate and continue the review and the analysis." And as CNBC, it's CNBC.com notes, and a number of other media reports noted, that is in direct contradiction not only with the EPA's website, but with also the scientific verdict internationally about what the root cause of climate change is, which is carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases by the burning of fossil fuels. This is a classic denialism position from Mr. Pruitt, and just unmitigated scorn of climate science, of reason, of logic, and of rationality. It is a profoundly immoral remark from a profoundly immoral individual.
Well, there you go. I couldn't have said it better myself. It is profoundly distressing, almost to the point of being, I guess I'm not sure what it's to the point of. It's like, this guy cannot be allowed to continue. I mean, he is deliberately, he is in charge of the Environmental Protection Agency. The scientific data that the EPA puts up, NASA puts up, is incontrovertible. It's given as the starting point is that carbon dioxide is the issue because it's been proven so many times, but he continues to, when he says this, the implications are enormous, right? That we don't need any, shouldn't waste our money on any sort of climate research because, you know, it's, well, maybe he didn't say that. Maybe he didn't say that. Maybe he said that we just need to keep looking. We need to stay in the limbo where we're not quite sure. We never actually take action. Maybe he'll let us do some research, but we don't actually have to do anything because it continues to be uncertain, right?
Well, he pulled a Clark Gable. He basically said, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn about climate change. And in terms of just, you know, what this portends for the EPA, I mean, you have to think that you can only imagine the level of disillusionment about the remaining employees of the EPA who do believe in the mission, who do believe in what the EPA is supposed to do, when they hear this jerk get up there and just basically smear science.
Yeah.
It does sort of validate the remarks that Senator Ed Markey has made about the goal of Pruitt to turn the EPA into every polluter's ally.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess, I mean, so this news is pretty fresh, right? The implications, as we said, I mean, the implications and the reaction, or not so much the reaction, which everyone is angry, but I mean, what's the counterpunch for the a person in holding an office of public trust to say something that is so demonstrably at odds with scientific fact has to be some kind of a violation of something. I'm not.
Well, CNBC notes that Senator Brian Schatz, co-chair of the Senate Climate Action Task Force, called Pruitt's remarks extreme and irresponsible, and says that senators will provide scrutiny of Pruitt's actions. Of course, how much scrutiny the Senate can provide based on the current configuration of the Senate remains to be seen, to say the least. But it does raise the question of whether or not Pruitt's radicalism will be a point of conversation in the 2018 midterm elections. And if, in fact, those elections result in a reconfiguration of the Senate, will there be scrutiny and investigations by the part of, on the part of the reconfigurated Senate into Pruitt's actions?
Well, I guess it's funny. In reading the various articles, I guess the question was posed by the CNBC questioner, I guess, basically phrased it in terms of whether or not carbon dioxide was the knob that raised and lowered global warming, right? Mm-hmm. And, of course, Pruitt said he didn't think so, et cetera, et cetera. But to try and carry that analogy one step forward, the knob that each and every individual one of us has to make something happen is to call your congressman, no matter what state you're from, right? Mm-hmm. And to call them up and tell them this is outrageous and unacceptable. And the only people that can really put the screws to Pruitt right now is U.S. Congress and maybe even the White House, right? Mm-hmm. There's the White House call-in line. And President Cheeto pays a lot of attention to his reviews. I mean, call up and say that this is just unacceptable. And I suppose there must be an EPA call-in number or something, but it's just, you want to have, it is disempowering to think that this man can get away with such outrageous statements without consequence. And the consequence, thing that each one of us can do is to call and speak our mind. I mean, that works, right? And so I guess it just off the top of my head, that's, and of course, you can always reverse the call and say, look, nothing's going to happen at the federal level. We need to work here in Massachusetts. Call your state representative, work for the 100% clean electricity bill. Those things, I mean, I hate to walk away from the federal stuff, but it is, I mean, it certainly is a call. If we have the opportunity here in the state or in whatever locality you live in, make that place green. And when we finally get rid of Mr. Pruitt, you know, all that green stuff will grow up.
And returning to the issue of the federal level, we talked last week about the House Climate Solutions Caucus and Darrell Issa after years and years of harassing scientists joining the House Climate Solutions Caucus. I think now is the time for every single member of that caucus to stand up and forcefully denounce these ludicrous and sick remarks by Mr. Pruitt, because essentially what Pruitt is doing, Pruitt is basically sticking two middle fingers in the faces of every member of the House Climate Solutions Caucus, sticking two middle fingers in the faces of everybody, even members of his own party, who support putting a price on carbon as a means of addressing climate change, and just basically, you know, essentially saying that he doesn't give a damn about anything that crosses his ideological preferences.
Absolutely. I mean, so this statement is new. I hope over the course of the coming days, there will be some sort of coherent pushback somewhere. People should keep an eye on it to see how they can contribute to that. But I think that expressions of outrage to your local representative member of Congress is a good way to start. So I guess one of the things that is troubling about Pruitt's kinds of statements has to do with the following thing. And I'll give a little background just so that everyone's on the same page. Back in 1972, when the Clean Air Act was first passed, basically, at the time that was first passed, California had already, you know, prior to 1972, had already begun to make pollution laws, right? Because it's big enough, it could do some of that. There were pollution laws in California already existing, and California wanted to maintain the ability to keep those laws and not have them be preempted by anybody else. So California was written into the Clean Air Act as a special case that they could, if they were granted a waiver by the EPA, have rules that were different and perhaps more aggressive than the national rules in terms of environmental issues. And that has played well over the last, 50 years since the EPA was set up. It turns out that the California tailpipe emissions law, when California sets a rule for auto emissions that's more aggressive than the federal government, other states can join and demand that same kind of car be sold in their state. So here in Massachusetts, we oftentimes will, whatever California does for automobile tailpipe exhaust, we also do it, and it increases the number of cars that that are sold with the cleaner polluting technology. So, okay, so there's this whole thing where California swings a lot of weight in environmental rules because it can do stuff on its own if the EPA accedes or allows it to go forward. California's got a cap and trade regulation. California has a lot of carbon pollution rules. And of course, they need a waiver from the EPA in order to maintain those rules. And there is a reasonable chance that this madman at the EPA will deny California the opportunity to have more aggressive, deny California the opportunity to have a cap and trade system, right? That would be a horrible thing. And so the question is, how do we go about stopping that? I mean, DR, did you see anything about that? I mean,
yes. So there's a great piece in the Atlantic about this and emphasizing the importance of that, of the waiver and California's efforts to curb carbon emissions from greenhouse gas emissions from cars, and the speculation, as you note, about whether President Trump and EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt will deny this waiver to California. As we've noted previously, 10 years ago, the then EPA Administrator Stephen Johnson, Pruitt, before Pruitt, if you will, denied California's request for such a waiver. It was later under the Obama administration that waiver was in fact granted. So now Pruitt appears to be, you know, fixated on, you know, doing what Stephen Johnson did 10 years ago. And as has been noted by the Atlantic and others, you know, California plans to fight just as they did fight, the decision by Johnson before it was reversed by the Obama administration. But California is planning to fight, and by all rights, California should win that fight, because if you think about it, all these people running around talking about states' rights, states' rights, oh, states' yeah, rights. Yeah. Well, doesn't California have a state's right to protect its citizens from pollution?
Well, I mean, I've got friends who are sort of quote unquote 10th Amendment people who believe that whatever the phrase is, you know, any powers that are not explicitly given to the federal government are reserved to the states, right? So that covers everything, right? And now you can block voting rules and all kinds of stuff. But in this instance, it's a principle, I think, a states' right principle, right? Is that, I mean, the law is written the way it's written, so it's not really a constitutional thing. But if Pruitt will walk around and say that the states are the best place to address environmental problems, and he wants Oklahoma to be able to control its own fracking industry, while at the same time not allowing California to control its own cap and trade program, that is, I mean, it's so far hypocritical as to be disqualifying. I mean, but you just that is the thing that people need to know, that Scott Pruitt's principles only run one way. They only run in favor of the fossil fuel industry. I don't know.
It will be interesting to see how vigorously California resists in the courts this plan to sort of screw them out of the waiver. We talk about Darrell Issa. You know, think about members of Pruitt's party in California, members of Pruitt's party who profess a belief in states' rights. Are they going to back Pruitt, or are they going to back the principle of states' rights? Huh? Will they be hypocrites, or will they not be hypocrites?
Yeah, I mean, but I think the case of Darrell Issa that we talked about last week or whenever, I mean, that shows you. I mean, that guy didn't change his stripes and join the climate caucus because he all of a sudden gets worried about the planet. He changed his stripes because he's had a near-death encounter with the voter, right? And he almost lost. And so it's back to the question of you need to talk to your congressman. You need to talk to these people in order to set them straight. And then, you know, and eventually it will ripple through to Mr. Pruitt.
Well, as we always say, power concedes nothing without a demand.
Without a demand, right. I mean, this whole program that we've been going at, looking 15, 16 minutes, it is, this is a rant, right? This is just complaining about how bad things are. I mean, there's more, right? We got a list of terrible things this week. I think that we should try, at least speak to myself here. I got to pull myself back from this kind of anger and just say that here in Massachusetts, we have a lot of good opportunities to make real progress, right? We have there's a law proposed, a bill proposed, not a law yet, it's a bill, but it's proposed in the Massachusetts legislature that says all self-driving cars that are coming must be electric.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that is simple, concrete. Call up your state representative and tell them that you support that. You want them to do that here in Massachusetts. That would be, you know, then we just start the introduction of electric vehicles. I think the driverless cars are coming sooner than anyone wants to admit. So we got to kind of hurry up. I mean, there's another bill for the state legislature that calls for Massachusetts to generate all of its electricity from clean sources by the middle of the next decade or so. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Call your state representative, make him or her, but make that person sign on, be a co-sponsor, and vote for that bill. Right? Mm-hmm. These are things that you can do in the here, in the now, and actually have success at, right? And that will, in the long term, support the national solution when we get back to it, right? Even if we don't get enough momentum to unseat Mr. Pruitt in the near term. Right here in Massachusetts, we can lay the groundwork when the Trump drunkenness finally passes and we turn around and say, okay, how are we going to deal with things? We will have models here in Massachusetts, right?
Exactly. We've set national precedents before. Why not do it again?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, dear, I think that we will put the other horrific the other terrible things off. Maybe we'll talk about them next time. Mr. Pruitt and his outlandish statements really are a cause for reaction. But there you go. So we'll put up links to most of what we talked about at the blog, DR. It's of course, is at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can click through to the blog and play it on SoundCloud from there. Share us with your friends so they can find out about us. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using most of those applications, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, all those kind of things. You, of course, can find us on iTunes at Mass Climate Action. So we will close where we always close by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration, such as the EPA guy declaring carbon dioxide not a pollutant, those must not be accepted as normal. And we must insist that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, thank you for sharing talking me down, as they say. I really appreciate you being here.
It's a damn shame that Pruitt won't accept his responsibility for building a durable future. I'm sure he considers himself pro-life, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. No, they all do. Except when once you're born, then it's different. Anyway, exactly. Thanks for being here, DR. Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again next week. I guarantee you we'll be in a better mood. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.